You're listening to the NetMums podcast with me, Wendy Gollidge.
And me, Alison Perry. Coming up on this week's show...
If you get cross with someone because they can't read your mind, you need to have a long, hard look at yourself. And that's so often, that's what we do, is we go, well, he would know if he loved me. No, he wouldn't. Oh, she would know if she... No, that nobody is a mind reader. And thank God. I wouldn't want you to know what goes on in my head.
But before all of that,
this episode of the NetMums podcast is brought to you by Fairy Non-Bio, the number one laundry brand for sensitive skin.
They've partnered with Great Ormond Street Hospital Children's Charity to support seriously ill children and their families. With every Fairy Non-Bio pack bought from Home Bargains, Fairy Non-Bio will donate 5p to GOSH charity with a minimum donation of £100,000.
I know where I'm going after this. Now, on with the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode. Now, this week in my household, we have entered a bit of a new area with my 13-year-old daughter. After about 3 years of her nagging me to let her have TikTok and Instagram and me saying no and me very resolutely saying no, I have succumbed and I have relented and I've said yes. I have, Wendy. I've given in. I've now got the fear because I'm now thinking... Oh my goodness, am I a terrible parent? Am I now basically opening up the gateway to all of these horrible things on the internet and social media? That basically, the reason I've done it is because I really feel like I don't want to be that parent who like says no, says no, says no. And the more you say no to something, the more your teenager just wants to go off and do it and they'll find a way and do it behind your back. And so I don't know, Wendy, what do you think? Am I doing the right thing?
Oh, you're giving me the fear. We've not quite hit teen and I'm already like,
yeah.
I think I agree with you. All of the things my parents said you can't do, I went and did. So, but let's ask our guests because they between them have a gamut of teenagers and older than teenagers. So they'll have had this conversation. Our two guests today are Andrea McLean and Nick Feeney. Andrea, of course, has been on our TV screens for years, from GMTV and Loose Women to Dancing on Ice. More recently, she's written books, blogs, recorded podcasts about helping women in midlife, and her husband Nick is a life coach. Together, they've recently launched a new podcast called Mastering Midlife, which sees them speaking to experts about navigating midlife. And I think we all need help in navigating midlife.
We do.
Andrea and Nick, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
So before I ask you our official first question, what was your party line on TikTok and Instagram with the kids? And how old are your kids? Tell our listeners how old they are, just so if they don't know.
So we're a blended family. Met and married in midlife with two each. So when we got together, the kids were, was it 10, 5 or 10?
Mine were 10 and 8.
And mine were nearly 11 and 7, I think. Mm-hmm. So now they're early 20s, late teens. So the youngest is now 17. And I'm pretty sure the oldest was a boy. And he wasn't that interested in TikTok and all that sort of thing. I remember TikTok started as Musical.ly. So when Musical.ly came out, I remember Amy and Sienna, they're the two youngest, they're 17 and 18 now. We didn't really see much harm in it because they were just literally doing funny little dances and they were getting us involved. And it seemed to be children doing dances. And then I don't know when it tipped over and Musical.ly became TikTok. But by then they were embedded, they were invested. And so we thought, taking them out, it wouldn't have really worked. But I think because they were already in there, it wasn't that much of a big deal. Mm. But the gate that we opened wasn't the same gate that you're facing. Mm. Is different.
I think also as well, it's you would have done a lot of groundwork already on, you know, parameters, what's expected of them and things like that. And I'm sure they will have a level of understanding of right and wrong. You know, so that will help them.
You'd hope.
Well, you know, hopefully by now we've done that bit. And I think that will really help them. And what we get now is I'm constantly, certainly from the eldest one, been sent air fryer recipes from TikTok. And we've actually tried some cooking recipes ourselves from TikTok. So, yeah. I mean, there is a wealth of stuff out there.
Amy's 17, and her relaxing thing to do is bake. And the results are varied. Mind actually, because it could be a lot worse, and she gets all her recipes off TikTok, so it's fine.
Yeah,
it's okay.
This is a whole new world.
And where do you stand? Where do you guys stand on the whole being strict versus giving them a little bit of leeway so that they don't rebel too much and go totally off the rails?
We've met in the middle with this, haven't we? Mm. I was very strict. Very strict. No means no. I mean, no, still means no. But it's like, but everyone else is. If everyone else jumps off a cliff, do you want to jump off a cliff? That sort of thing.
I hear that so often. Honestly, it drives me mad. All my friends get to do it. I don't care.
And I think the thing was, I genuinely didn't care because I'm a bit odd like that. I don't, even now, I don't care what other people are doing and think, oh, I need to be doing that. So it was, I found it easier. But yeah, we did. We had the conversation about boundaries and parameters and then also trust. So this is a trust exercise for us. And we're opening this door for you to step in. But if we get any kind of inkling that either you're seeing things that we don't think you're emotionally mature enough to handle, or that it's leading to behaviors that are, they're not you, if you know what I mean. We'll sit and have a chat about it. And also, we pay for your phone. So at the end of the day, the buck literally stops with us. So that was the kind of hard line. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much so. The trust is a super important thing.
Mm.
And what we try and build is an environment where they can tell us anything, even if it's not great.
Yeah.
You know, because I'd rather they didn't hide things from us.
Mm-hmm.
We created an environment where we go, look, guys, you know, they've all had life coaches as well, because like they've had their own challenges. And as parents, you know yourself, you can tell them till they're blue in the face. Then someone else says it and it's like, oh my God, I heard this thing. And you're like,
I told you that.
I've been telling you that for years.
I've been saying that for years.
And we were just aware that certain things, you know, because of what we do for a living, and we were just aware of just how they were and how each one came to it at different times. But there's just these core values that we have as a family, and we stick with them. They're core values as parents. And they still try and, like any other family, play dad off against mum and things like that, you know. But ultimately, when we say no, it's no. We're both very rigid on that. We're not their friends. We want to get on with them, but ultimately we're parents. Anyone can be their friend, but we get the honour to be their parent. And that's something that we cherish.
I'm going to pick on the no is no thing. So no absolutely means no. And I remember when they were little and my take on it was, we shared this, ask me again. Go on, I dare you. Ask me again. The more you ask me, the worse this is going to be for you. So it is in your interest to back off. Do not keep asking. And it was said not just in a very, I'm quite a calm sort of parent. So it was said like
there
that.
There was a Scottish undertone.
Oh, there was
there?
A very Scottish undertone. Ask me.
I know that well.
Ask me again, I dare you. As they got older, what we realise as well is that it's not a weakness to go away. Do your own bit of, whether it's reevaluating or research or speak to other parents or what have you, and even have a deeper conversation ourselves and realise, actually, our gut reaction was no, but there is wiggle room on this. So we will go back to them and say, do you know what? We've changed our mind slightly on this. Not because you haven't badgered us into this. We've gone away and we've had a think about it. So we're altering it slightly.
So as you say in the first episode of your podcast, between you, you've had 5 marriages, 4 children, 3 divorces and 2 dogs, which is going some. I'm impressed. So what have you learned along the way?
Do you know, I think one, I've learned to stop being ashamed and embarrassed of the fact that I've been married 3 times. Obviously, my third marriage is to Nick. You've been married twice. Your second marriage is to me. To not be ashamed of it. There used to be a lot of shame surrounding that because I felt like I'd failed in some sort of way and shown a sort of recklessness, which really doesn't sum up my personality at all. What I've come to see is actually I was really fortunate that I've had 3 instances in my life where I have met someone and we've loved each other and we've tried to make something wonderful happen and it didn't work. So rather than, I don't know, you know, I meet a lot of people who, especially, you know, my parents' sort of generation, when we got married, you stick at it and 57
in my
years
day, it meant for life. Yes.
So, you know, and then you kind of dig a little bit deeper and you find out they've been really miserable for 40 of those years. And you just think, No, I reframe that. You've got one life. And if you genuinely feel that you can do this in a way that, you know, are we okay? Are the kids okay? Do you know what? We're going to go and try and find happiness elsewhere. That's also teaching the kids that actually if something is broken and you've tried your best to fix it, you don't have to stick with it to your own, if something is to your own detriment. And in my cases, my marriages were to my detriment. They were not right. So I think that's what I've learned, really, that I'm not ashamed of them. I used to be, but I'm not anymore. And I'm the first to take the mickey out of myself with it, but not in the same way I used to. I used to jump in first and take the mickey out myself to sort of show people like, all right, I've heard all the gags before.
Yeah, no one can say it. I've heard it all before.
Yeah. So what about you? What do you say you've learned?
My learnings were just, so my first relationship was 23 years and I was thinking it was happy ever after and everything, and it was a big step for me to do it, but it was the right step for me to do it, albeit I went through a whirlwind of depression afterwards and all, you know, it was my entire adult life gone, and that loss of identity and the grief that follows it, and you know, even if it is your decision to do. So I did a lot of work on myself, and I had to reach out to some a therapist as well and a coach, because I was entering into a world that I didn't want to get my facts from my mates who had never been through it, you know, and all the ones that had been through it, it hadn't been pleasant, so they were not going to give me great advice. So I went to someone that could genuinely help me without any sort of connection to my previous life or my future life. And I just took responsibility for who I was and who I wasn't. I knew that I'd mucked up on many occasions. So it was like, okay, how can I be better? How can I do better? And, you know, when you look at the stats of first marriages, it's 51% ending or 50% ending in divorce. Second marriages are 72%, I believe. And the reason being is people take the same personality and traits into that second marriage, blaming the other partner for what was actually 50% their responsibility. So I just knew that it was such a big upheaval for that to finish, and I never wanted it to happen again. But it was a bit that I could control, which was working on me.
So, Nick, you're a life coach, aren't you? But Andrea, what's it like living with a life coach? Like, do you live with the most incredible mindset, setting goals all the time and smashing them every day? Or is it not quite like that in reality?
No, he is like that in reality. And sometimes it's exhausting. He's like the Duracell bunny. He leaps out of bed. Woohoo! Not so much now, he's got a bad back at the moment, so he's kind of creaking out of bed. But yeah, he is. He absolutely is exactly as he seems in terms of, you know, he's very driven. He wants to be the best that he can be. He wants to pay it forward. He gets very excitable about things. learns a new thing. It's like living with Elf all year round.
I was going to liken him to a golden retriever. It sounds a little bit like living with a golden retriever as well. Kind of like, I did something
Yeah.
I will take both of them.
Hopefully you smell better than a golden retriever, Nick, because mine stinks.
Andrew? <Every day. laughs> No, it's great. And what's good as well is we've been together long. We met 10 years ago. So we've technically been together 9 years. We met 10 years ago. And so we're in a place now where you've stopped trying to make me like you and I've stopped trying to just calm you the hell down, and we just sort of meet in the middle. And now you're all right with me being chilled. I don't move as much as you. I'm really happy just watching telly, whereas you're like, let's go climb a mountain or whatever, you know. I'm like, off you go. You go for your life. And we're good. We sort of meet in the middle with it. So yeah, it's all fine.
That's good. That sounds really healthy.
It is funny because we've had a couple of moments where Andrew will say, I'm feeling this, I'm feeling that, and I'll ask her some questions. She's like,
Stop coaching me.
I just need a husband right now.
I did wonder that, whether, Andrew, you would find yourself being like stealthily coached by Nick at times.
He doesn't understand stealth. He's like full on in your face. I can remember one time I was washing up, wasn't it?
Put my leotard on and everything. Yeah. Come on, coach.
Do you remember that time we were in the kitchen, I was washing up. Oh, I was just moaning. I was having a moan. I didn't actually want any solutions. I just wanted to just like get it off my chest. And you were like, well, have you considered? And have you looked at? And perhaps if, and I was like throwing
but
things at
I think that's
it.
A man. I don't even think that's a Nick being a coach thing. I think that's a man and woman thing, because often women just want to go, and another thing, and then this, and then this. And they're like, what's the solution? I'm like, I don't want a bloody solution. Just listen to me moan. And I think it is just boys and girls. Sorry.
It's so true.
But we say it now, don't we?
Well, now I say, do you want me to listen or do you want me to help? And it's like, I just want to listen. And
clever.
It's like, cool.
That's good.
You know what's so nice is actually just by saying that, I feel like, okay, that's cool. And I actually listen more intently, because rather than going, oh, here's a solution, I just listen and go, wow. And literally go, I can completely understand how that must annoy you, you know, and that's it.
Done.
Yeah. That's such a good idea. Now, your new podcast is called Mastering Midlife. And Andrea, you've been talking about midlife for years. I myself post on Instagram as the midlife mum, so I know how important it is to have these conversations. But I'm really curious, what does the term midlife mean to each of you? Because I really feel like in the last few years, it's had a bit of an overhaul from going from being associated with midlife crisis to now it's almost been reclaimed, hasn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's such a great question, because, you know, when I wrote my second book, was about the menopause, and I wrote it it came out back in 2018. And so obviously it was dealing with a midlife problem. And it was because I'd had to have a hysterectomy in my mid-40s, so I went into surgical menopause. I was told not to write the book. I was told no one would want to be associated with me, or I could lose work because of it, because it was, you know, it was seen as old to talk about these kind of things.
That's only 5 years ago. Wow.
Yeah, and it's interesting. So I did it anyway, and I brought the book out, and it has gone on to help thousands and thousands of women. And it sort of spurred me on to start the website and build this Girls on Fire, just in terms of just helping women at this midpoint in their life. So to me, midlife means you're halfway through, not halfway done. You've got to a point where you have all this life experience and all this learning. And yes, you've made mistakes. And yet, you know, this whole idea that you're born and then you just succeed on an incredibly steady upward trajectory until you die having done amazing things your whole life. And life is not like that. Life is like a bowl of spaghetti. It's really messy. And sometimes you go down and up and backwards. And to me, by the time you get to midlife, you've realized, I have all these learnings. I now know what I don't want and I know what I do want. And actually, if I can spare anyone some of the mess then it's actually a really fair thing to do to sort of pass it on. You know, when we came up with the podcast idea, a lot of it came from this idea of what's it like to live together as a couple when you both work in this space where, you know, you're constantly learning and evolving and growing and teaching yourself, going on courses and this kind of thing. Oh my God, what's it like? It must be a nightmare because we must be just mastering midlife all the time. And actually it was a total play on words because we are crashing through midlife. We don't have all the answers at all. And anyone who says they do by the time they're halfway through, well, they're making it up. Nobody has all the answers by the time they're halfway through because you only know half the stuff. So for me, midlife is a point when you're halfway through, not halfway done. And then if you can look at it with a twinkle in the eye and but a bit of knowledge behind you and also a big heart and pay it forward, that's all we're trying to do.
But Nick, a question for you here. It feels to me that midlife and all of the conversations that are brilliantly happening about midlife seem to be really female-centric. How do you think midlife affects men? And is it something we should be talking about more? Because there's not the obvious menopause for men, midlife tends to centre around the menopause. And I'm just interested how you think it affects men.
Well, statistically, if you look into it, it's actually really terrible reading. The biggest killer of men in their 40s is themselves. They reach the unhappiest time of their life. They did this study called the Unhappy Curve, and at the lowest point is at 47 years and 3 months. It's not great reading. And I think you've hit the nail on the head when you were talking about having the menopause. You know, women throughout their entire lives have nature reminding them of where they are, you know, and they're constantly having to talk about it. They're constantly having to deal with these things, either in their, you know, social circles or with their clinicians, you know. And so there's a lot of awareness of what's going on, whereas men, there isn't anything. And even when it comes to two of the biggest things that men in midlife struggle with is hair loss and lack of testosterone, there really isn't a huge conversation about that. You know, you do not get blokes going into groups and going, hey, you know, how's your testosterone levels? It just wouldn't be a conversation that they would even consider having, because there is no, you know, everything that we do happens because, like, there's almost like these little breadcrumbs that lead you to, like, the menopause, you know, the start of your cycle, the end of your
cycle. But the vernacular for men is still very much midlife crisis, whereas the vernacular, you said earlier, Alison, about midlife being reclaimed, but I'm not sure it has been reclaimed in the male space. It has in the female space.
And I think the thing is, we're getting better. I'm certainly seeing a lot more awareness in the men, because I specifically coach men in midlife. But the thing is, it has to be an actual awareness, because there isn't like a natural thing that gets them. And the trouble with midlife crisis is because they keep doing the thing that has got them to where they've got to, expecting a different result. And have taken all these body blows through life, whether it's broken relationships, frayed relationships, poor health, because, you know, at the expense of getting the next thing, the next big house, the next car, and chasing all these things, they haven't checked in with themselves. But more importantly, they've actually been doing something that they thought 20 years ago was what they wanted to do, and now they don't even know who they are when they're doing it. And it's at the expense of their relationships, at the expense of their health. And I speak, you know, a lot through experience, because that's exactly what I did. I had my own midlife crisis at 40, when my life imploded, and I was one of those guys that was just chasing everything, next, pushing through, and not checking in with myself and not asking myself some better questions.
It's hard to imagine how stressful it is for families when their child is seriously ill. But Fairy Non-Bio has partnered with GOSH Charity to provide some comfort.
That's right, Wendy. One of the areas that GOSH Charity funds is free accommodation for families located close to the hospital while their child is receiving treatment. Being able to stay close to their child and not worry about the cost helps ease the stress during what can be an extremely difficult time.
Between now and the 31st of March 2024, for every pack of Fairy Non-Bio Detergent, Fairy Fabric Softener or Fairy Inwash Scent Boosters that you buy in Home Bargains, Fairy will make a 5p donation to GOSH Charity.
Which means that you can show your support as you shop. Now, back to our guest.
Andrea, you've just mentioned that you had a hysterectomy in your mid-40s due to endometriosis. So I wanted to ask you about what your menopause was like. I've heard stories that kind of chemical menopauses are very different to real menopause. Is that true? What were your experiences?
So I was already entering the perimenopause when I had my hysterectomy. So I started early. I was in my late 30s and I ended up, I had a baby at 38, which can happen when there's like a hormonal surge, just as you're sort of ending your fertile years, your body goes, come on, one more time.
Fair play to you. The idea of a baby at 38. Oh my God.
Oh, Wendy, I had two babies when I was 39.
Yeah, I know. And fair play.
I had to have fertility treatment to have Finley. So I didn't expect to get pregnant naturally at all at 38. So it was a huge surprise. But, you know, I'm so glad I have lovely Amy. So it's amazing. So for me, once I'd had her, obviously there's a lot of hormonal changes happen anyway postnatally. And it took a while to realize, yes, it's a mixture of obviously a postnatal hormonal change. I had postnatal depression after having Amy as well. So there was a lot of things kind of tied up at that time. But when I was 42 was when I realized actually what I was experiencing was a perimenopause. And I was told that by a GP, because I went to get my coil change like you do. And she went, oh, actually, you seem to be, have you experienced this, this, and this, and this, and this? And I was like, yes, I have. So while she was having a little rummage, changing my coil. Changes, you know what I'm saying. And she was amazing. And she was the one that actually really helped me understand that at that age, this is a totally normal thing to be starting down the sort of menopausal road. Then by the time I was 46, I was told really the best solution for me in terms of my endometriosis, which I'd had for a lifetime, was a full hysterectomy. Full hysterectomy means everything's gone. So ovaries, cervix, womb, the whole thing. And you go into full menopause overnight. So the main difference between a surgical menopause and a natural menopause is clearly the speed and the intensity. But I was really lucky. I went back to see this initial doctor, who was Dr. Tina Pears. And I said to her, I've had a full hysterectomy literally a couple of weeks ago. And she went, right, you need to be on everything. So she was brilliant. What's interesting was I didn't have that conversation with my surgeon. He just said, oh, well, you're already on a little bit of HRT, so that should be fine. And knowing what I know now, it absolutely would not have cut it at all. So I was just really lucky. I was very, very lucky that the years before, my GP couldn't remove my coil and sent me to another GP who was better at it, and she happened to be a menopause expert. It was luck more than anything else.
It seems like that's the same story for so many women. It's so hit and miss. It depends on the GP you talk to, what training they may or may not have had, because as we know, menopause training isn't mandatory for GPs. You know, so much of it just seems to be luck, doesn't it? Which is kind of terrifying.
Can you imagine if foot training wasn't mandatory for GPs, and you went into your doctor and you sprained your ankle, go, I didn't do feet. I mean, how ridiculous is that? It's a part of our anatomy. Imagine, I'm going to opt out of elbows.
Well, I really don't like feet, so I would have opted out of feet, but nevertheless, you're right. You can't just say I don't do feet.
Good job you're not a doctor, Wendy.
There's many reasons why it's a good job I'm not a doctor.
Now, Andrea, you said something that rang so true with me. So I'm 44 and I've been perimenopausal for, I think, 3 years. And you've said that dealing with the menopause is a full-time job and it's a bit like gardening. So you said you get it all planted and all the bulbs come up and you get everything all looking lovely and you think, all right, I'm done now. But it's not like that. You have to keep watering it and you have to keep feeding it with all the different minerals and vitamins and everything that your garden needs. And I feel like, oh my goodness, this is exactly how I feel. Like, you always have to be keeping an eye on symptoms and adjusting things, don't you?
Yeah. And I think that, you know, bringing Nick into this conversation, I think I'm really lucky in that we have a really good relationship and I'm able to explain that to him, that it's not a case of, right, just take this thing and then you're done.
Wouldn't it be but nice if it was, though?
Wouldn't it be so nice? You know, and I think a lot of men think, yeah, but you've done that now. It's you're sure
stick
you're
a patch
finished
on your bum and you're done. Off you go.
And exactly. But actually, no, it can ebb and flow. And sometimes things at work, they don't seem to work anymore. And anxiety levels go through the roof, or there's brain fog, or there's fatigue and all the things. And I think what's so great is that obviously we met later in life. We had the discussion, obviously, about me having a hysterectomy. We then have, we're very open about everything. So we'll talk about how, you know, you seem a little bit off. I know, I'm not quite feeling myself. I think it could be this. Whereas I think a lot of relationships, the woman doesn't understand this whole analogy of it is like a garden. It's not like DIY where you put a cushion and change the sofa and it stays that way. It's like a garden where weeds appear and you need to keep, you know, tending to it. And I think it would be so much more helpful if men and women were able to have that conversation together. So men at least understood what women were going through. You know, one of the biggest and best responses that I had to my book all those years ago was men coming up to me in the street saying, and I thought it would be, you're that woman off the telly. And it wasn't. Remember that time in the car park? This man came up to me and he went, you're that woman. And I thought what would follow was off the telly. And he said, you're that woman who wrote that book. And he burst into tears. And he just said,
oh my God,
I recognize your face because your book is on my wife's bedside table. You've given me my wife back. And it was, we both cried. Oh. And he gave me a big hug. And he said, there were parts of it where she said to me, I can't articulate how I'm feeling right now. Read this.
And oh, that's just giving me goosebumps.
Oh, I know.
And me.
To me, that's like, and do you know, if I go tomorrow, I've done one useful thing. So, and I think that's what it comes down to. If we don't understand what we're going through, how can we expect men to understand what we're going through? So the very least we can do is just try and have an open and honest conversation about it all.
So I was going to ask you, Nick, what men can do to support their partners, but maybe it's just buy them Andrea's book.
The funny thing is, so I play golf a lot and I do little days where I may be in a group that I won't necessarily know the people that I'm playing with, you know, and then we get into conversation and they might say, oh my God, my wife's driving me mad at the moment. She's this, she's that. And I'm going, okay. And I ask a few questions and that. By the end of the round, they've bought Andrea's book. And I said, look, mate, if you want your wife to be your wife in your future, then I suggest you learn to be a better husband and understand what she's going through. Because I'll tell you what, it's hell. And if you were going through it, right, you'd be having weeks off. So I said, let's understand what she's going through and then ask her how you can help her.
Always coaching, Nick, even on the golf course.
And there are other books available. You don't have to...
No, just yours, Andrea.
Well, I don't recommend them.
Okay, all right. Okay. But there are lots of books. In case anyone thinks, my God, she's going on plugging this book.
You were supposed to be plugging the podcast. Hang on a minute.
You know what? It all comes down to having those conversations. Because, like, it is, if I'm going through something as a man in a relationship and I'm not telling my wife, my partner, and likewise, you know, that's when the gaps, the disconnect starts happening. And that's when issues start coming. And because we've both been through that, that is one thing we are absolutely all over, that we are always connecting. And if there is a disconnect, then it's like, are you okay? Is everything okay? You know, and then we have those honest conversations because we genuinely want to be together in each other's future as husband and wife, you know, but grow together. And the only way that you can do that is stay connected and communicate.
I think that's such an important point.
If you get cross with someone because they can't read your mind, you need to have a long, hard look at yourself. And that's so often, that's what we do, is we go, well, he would know if he loved me. no, he wouldn't. Oh, she would know if she... No, that nobody is a mind reader. And thank God. I wouldn't want you to know what goes on in my head.
And of course, midlife isn't just about the menopause. It's a part of it, but it's not the whole thing. What are the other things? What are the other areas that you think it's good for us to focus on when we hit this period in our lives?
Do you know? And I'm so glad you said that, because it's one of the reasons why, you know, I've written 4 books in my life, and only one of them has been about the menopause. And for me, it's just one part of my life. I don't want to be, oh, that's that menopause lady. And I don't just mean that because I'm well known. I wouldn't want it if I worked in a shop. Why would I want to be known as that? We're 360 degree full rounded beings. Why would you want to be known as one thing? So for me, it's always been about, you know, the work that I've done while I was in telly, and then since you know, leaving Loose and the other bits of telly that I've done. It's everything we do starts with how we think about it. So how can we just change our attitudes towards things, or our perception of things? And so for me, especially in midlife, like I say, you've got to this point, you're a big bowl of spaghetti, you've got a bit of a mess, but you've learned some stuff. How then can I put this to really good use? So it's taking the time to think, well, what do I actually want to do? You know, at this point, your kids are getting older. Yes, there are still challenges. You know, maybe they're entering the TikTok world, or there's a social media thing, or there's online bullying, or there's school issues. There's still these things. But you're also moving towards a point of empty nesting. Maybe you're thinking of changing career. All of these things are relevant to midlife, because you've reached this point where you have knowledge, you have experience, and also you have the guts to go, I don't want to do this anymore, and I want to change. And that's okay, whether it's your career or your parenting style or your hairstyle or whatever. That's what I think. There's so much more to it.
You mentioned actually the whole blended family thing earlier. What do you guys think is the secret to getting through that as smoothly and unspaghetti-like as possible?
I don't think there is a secret, to be honest, and other than talking to each other. And are we on the same page in terms of wanting the greater good?
Yeah. I mean, you've got to come to an agreement with how you're going to parent, for starters, because it's very common that two households coming together have very different viewpoints, or maybe even like bedtimes, how much fizzy pop you can drink, you know, all those sorts of things. So it's just really understanding what is the sort of minimum standard that you're going to expect it in that house. And also definitely to agree not to undermine one another on those things. Mm. But I also
think that applies blended or not, Nick.
You'll be surprised how many, when they go into it, you know, they're trying to win the other child over and things like that. And you start losing sight of what your primary role is. Inside that new family, because you're trying to find yourself as well in that place. And I think then you have to consider the other people, like the children and their ages, and what they're coming to this new blended family with, because they might, you know, still feel that you splitting from their mum or their dad was actually the terrible thing to do, and you're with this new partner, and that's actually, no, I want you to go back with them. So again, it's just making sure that you're having conversations constantly and setting the scene. But one thing that we did is, because when we had a couple of challenges within our own unit, we reached out to an amazing blended family coach, and her name's Jane Dockrell. She's actually on our first podcast and helping us to master Christmas, you know. But she still is amazing, because again, she can give you such clear advice on what to do, because she's seen it before and we haven't. So when you're going into these new sort of dynamics, like when you enter parenting, you can read as many books as you like. You're trying to find your way, aren't you? And that's what you're doing. So we can either spend some time doing it, but potentially making lots of mistakes, or reach out to someone like Jane, who just gave us some amazing advice. And she then went on to work with a couple of the girls to help them process their side of what was going on, and help their perspective. So, no, that's what I would definitely recommend.
And I think if I can add to that, it would be that really overused and very useful phrase, which is "this too shall pass." And it is, if things are going really great at the moment and you're kind of mentally high-fiving each other going, we are like Disney parents, we are smashing this. At some point, it is all going to come crashing down. But then also at that moment where everything's hitting the fan, is reminding yourself, this will pass. Because we've been through all of those. We've been through, you know, all the scenarios. And the tendency is to think, oh, my God, this is how my life is going to be now. For the rest of my life, it's going to be like this. And just as it was when your kids were not sleeping all night and, you know, you were toilet training, all of those kind of things where you think, I'm never going to have a normal life again. Actually, you do, and it passes. So it's to remind yourself of that. Don't get too complacent when you think, oh, yeah, crushing this. And then also, you know, it'll pass.
Just enjoy the process.
That's so true. Yeah. Now, like we mentioned at the start, Wendy and I are just entering into the kind of tween and teen phase of parenting. And that's a really big part of midlife, as you've already mentioned. Wendy and I do tend to, whenever we get guests on who've got teenagers or older, we tend to use it as a way of getting tips for ourselves. So hit us with your best parenting teenagers tip. Go.
Oh, my gosh. Firstly, remember they're all different. So what worked for one won't work for the other. So
just like menopause, you think you've got your garden planted and then the next one comes along and that one needs weed killer, not water.
Yeah, that one, like full soil and full sun. And this one, yeah, it's exactly the same. It's exactly the same. Number two.
I would just go back to what I said earlier. You know, you want to get on with your children, but you're not their mate. And like, you just need to make better decisions. And also, some of them aren't always popular, right? But you're their parent and you're the only parent that they've got. So be a great one.
Some of even being a great one, it's panic inducing. You think, am I being a great parent?
Well, you know what I mean by that. It's,
yeah, no pressure.
You,
say, yeah.
You try and do.
Everything
with the best intention. Yeah, you know,
exactly.
That's it. I don't want to put more pressure on mums because I'm well aware that there's plenty of pressure. But just try your best, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's it.
I remember having a conversation with Finn. Finn's the oldest, and you know. He's the only boy and he's the oldest. And, you know, we were butting heads about something. And I sat down with him and I said, have I ever been a parent to a teenage boy of this age before? And he went, no. I said, so how am I supposed to know exactly what I'm doing? I've never parented a young man of this age before. I'm doing the very best I can. And I'm trying to be the right, you know, give you the right boundaries and parenting and all this sort of stuff. But there will be times when you will absolutely disagree with me. And there'll be times that I get it wrong. But all I know is that I can go to bed every night and know I've done the best I can with the best intentions. And that's it. Mm. That's all I can give you. That's all I can give you.
I think that bit where you said as well, you know, it's when you do get it wrong, is be honest with them, especially as teenagers, because you're trying to encourage them to own up, you know, go, actually, I could have done that better. Actually, I did get that wrong. We have to lead by example with that. And like the bit that you said earlier, when it was a no, and then on reflection, we go, actually, I didn't mean that. Let's look at this. You can do the same. I was coaching, so there's this couple I coach, and she's been saying for a while, she's got twins, two boys, 12. And it's like, no means no. And I said, but what happens if you're wrong on reflection? Mm. Because sometimes we're thrown into something at a moment to make that decision. And then we react as humans, as we do, with, you know, whether that's our ego or like overbearing critical parent. And then we go back and go, oh, maybe I was a bit tough there. Maybe I was a bit over the top. By going back and saying that when everything's calmed down, give them grace and go, oh, my God, A, you it is all right to make a mistake, but also done in such a right way, I can be open to my parents and show them, actually, I said I was going to do that, but I didn't, and I'm sorry. And you've created a wonderful environment where they feel safe in doing that.
Finally, if someone listening is in their 30s and dreading midlife because of all of these conversations that are happening now about it, what would you say to them?
Do you know, I feel for women in their 20s and 30s, because there is so much out there at the moment about midlife, which sounds like you're going to be entering this terrifying time in your life where all the wheels fall off the bus and it's terrible. And what I would say is, do you know what? It's all right. It's all okay. All it is a different stage in your life, exactly the same as all the other stages that you've been through, whether it was, you know, childhood into puberty, into preteen, teen, 20s, 30s. It's literally just another stage and it will all be okay.
Yeah. And I think from a man's point of view as well, is like, because we don't have to deal with as many thoughts and pressures going through our head in there, but just look after yourself better, because most men think they're bulletproof, and I get it. And in our 20s, you pretty much feel like you are, even in your 30s. But you know, your body keeps a score, and start putting yourself first more.
I like that. I like that a lot. Thank you guys so much for joining us today. It's been so great. We've covered spaghetti, we've covered gardening, and we've covered so much more in between. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for joining us, guys. It was lovely to meet you.
Oh, thank you for having us. We've
thank
really
you very,
enjoyed
very
it.
Much.